Okay, thank you, NACA and FAO, for this opportunity. Aquaculture governance, existing policies, frameworks, and emerging possibilities in India. I'll be covering this topic under the three broad heads, that is aquaculture, economy, and food security, policies and players, and gaps, issues, and the forward with respect to India. Now, India has a diverse aquatic genetic resources, that is tropical to temperate to Palearctic kind, diverse ecosystem with adaptive traits and evolutions, a very high, heavy geological history. Approximately 9.5% of the global diversity it possesses. Consumption diversity, it's a very interesting thing, which will be actually in the future, it may need another strategy, because India has got a lot of culinary diversity. A fish which may fetch very high price, nearly $10 per kg, may not fetch anything in the neighboring state. So that kind of diversity we have. And the 47% of the population is vegetarian, so everybody doesn't eat the fish. So if fish production has to rise, consumption also has to rise. So there is a lot of different kind of preparation with the different people. And aquaculture at present is supported by the 6 species and from the 4 families. So it reflects, it's a very low level of domestication. Now, its role in economy and the food security. It's a almost 12.6 metric tons in the 17-18 and from the 0.75 metric tons in 1950. In the 5 decades, it has gone many folds. It produces 6.3% of the global fish production, livelihood support to 14 million people, 5.23% of agriculture GDP and 0.9% to the total GDP. Total exports are $7 billion, US dollars. Now, interesting thing here is the different environments. Everywhere you will have many environments, but one is the inland brackish water aquaculture, where now marine shrimp is being grown. That is perhaps only in India. A good production is now coming using the venomy as a shrimp from the inland areas, which are landlocked areas, where the saline water, underground saline water is coming up, and that lands are useless actually, for no purpose they can be used. So there now it is cultivating shrimp. A good production is coming out. And commodity-wise, if we see, that this is our structure. Marine fish culture is hardly 1.58%, shrimp 9.14%, and other freshwater fish is 13.7%, nearly 14%, and salurids 1.58%, like Pangasiodon. And the major production is carp, 73%, that is supported by Indian major carps, Rohu, Katla, and Mrigal. So this has been the shrimp and prawn aquaculture, which has been rising. One of the interesting thing is, like everywhere, the venomy share is rising in area-wise also, as well the production. It has replaced most of the Pinus monodon is still in culture in India in some parts of the there. And I think now what we see in the recent times, culture of monodon is rising also with the availability of the SPF monodon within India. So that culture is rising. Now, aquaculture in India, one of the new development with respect to governance has been the recently in 2019 creation of a separate Ministry of Fisheries, Animal Husbandry, Dairying with Government of India with a mission of Blue Revolution. And this is a new apex focal point of governance. Aquaculture is emerging as an industry and it is composite of value chain. So in case we have to look at the governance has to be looked upon these multiple chains, because now the world is looking for the safe food, world is looking for the disease-free, world is looking for the how the food is grown, each and everything, to the specific certification standards. So then these value chains, which form the total aquaculture, are also to be dealt with the appropriate governance standards. Now, legislations for aquaculture governance, if we see by definition, their scope should be, they should be transparent, knowledge-based, promote efficiency, responsive to emerging scenarios, and participatory with equity and inclusiveness. The available frameworks in India are mostly handled by the various ministries, and consultative groups are formed with the members drawn from different ministries and of different expertises. Now, it is the overall, if broadly we see the structure. First is the ministry level, from the production ministry to the environment ministry, they are involved. They are involved at the policy level. Then, with the help of research knowledge, which gives you the technical backstopping to these policies, the decision making and implementation channels start working, which are departments within the state, ministries in state and the center. India is a federal structure. Every state has got some kind of semi-autonomous kind of working, their own governance. So, and every state has got its own priorities on fisheries or aquaculture, agriculture and commodities. And they may have a very different capabilities. So, putting everything in a country like India, it's like putting everything in a subcontinent where everything is quite diverse. So, that becomes one of the challenge. Now, one of the, when we started, if we start historically on the governance, the first act was Indian Fisheries Act in 1897. And that empowered all the state government with prior sanctions of central government to make appropriate laws and procedures, and close season and mesh regulations of the fisheries were part of that act. And that act is still working now until it is replaced by other things. And another was the Environment Protection Act 1986 under Article 253 of the Constitution. It is an umbrella legislation of the environment, but it definitely affects the aquatic ecosystems. And it covers water for the pollution control and the Wildlife Protection Act. Several sharks and the elasmobranchs are under Schedule 1 of the act. So that means you cannot capture that. You cannot handle that. Holothuria scabra, sea cucumbers, pipe fishes, syngenathids, all are under part of Schedule 1 of this act. So they cannot be cultured, they cannot be captured without the appropriate provision and appropriate purpose. Now, why I brought the Environmental Protection Act? This was one of the turning point in Indian aquaculture, because the coastal stretch where are influenced by the tidal action, Supreme Court called it as a coastal regulation zone. There was a public interest litigation on environment. That environment is getting spoiled because of the coastal aquaculture. Rampant shrimp culture. So that Supreme Court at that time prohibited the construction and setup of shrimp culture ponds within the CRZ and within the 1,000 meters of two Ramsar sites, that is Chilka Lake and Pulikat Lake, except traditional extensive type of ponds. So this became a turning point, which at one point of time almost closed the shrimp aquaculture. And that was derived from the Environmental Protection Act. And then it gave rise to the another authority, that was the Coastal Aquaculture Authority 2005, which is working now. It is responsible for establishing norms and procedures in coastal aquaculture. So this is across the states, but this kind of policy make it policy across the states uniform, because it came from the Supreme Court, then it followed by the central government, and that was the policy which, as a central umbrella agency, Coastal Aquaculture Authority, then it started working at the Ministry of Fisheries. Now, another overarching act, response to CCBD of India, that is Biological Diversity Act 2002 and its rules, because it covers every genetic resource, every biological resource. I will say that it is one of the most comprehensive act in the world, because this covers the information, it protects the information they are in. There is a word, like now we are going for the digital digital kind of problems, but information therein is already protected under the Biological Diversity Act 2002. Now, this act is meant for conservation and use of biological resources, framework of access to the biological resources and sharing of benefits. If anybody wants to access the biological material from India, they have to go through the National Biodiversity Authority. And India is one of the few countries which has already established the Nogoya Protocol procedures, and there are several examples where access benefit sharing has been levied. One of the examples was the Ongole bull to the Brazil. So it is a comprehensive, and it has already implementing the access benefit sharing as per the Nogoya Protocol. There are several examples available to that, and is applicable to the farmed and the wild genetic resources. Now, this National Biodiversity Authority, there has been many times concern when there is a transfer of material, like improved material from India to other countries or inside India. But it works through two angles. Number one, it has to take, anybody who is accessing the material, he has to take permission from the National Biodiversity Authority, or there is a collaborative project with India. Then you don't need the permission. If the material exchange is between the collaborative thing, any improved fish or anything can be exchanged through their collaborative project mechanism. So this is the one this works through the many of the it prepares guidelines on the genetic resource accessions, and there are several expert committees from across the ministries which work. Like in agrobiodiversity, there are several ministry, several people from Ministry of Fisheries and the Ministry of Agriculture, and it is an inclusive mechanism of conservation. It creates state biodiversity boards. Then there are biodiversity management councils at the district levels. Now till now, nearly 140,000 of the BMCs have been created in India, and it creates the people's biodiversity register. That means whatever the resources available in a particular zone, that is covered under the people's biodiversity register. So now another is the, which is the nodal for the aquaculture development, that is the Ministry of Fisheries and Animal Husbandry, created in 2019. It's a nodal point for the relevant FAO and CGRFA bodies and the OIE. It's an integrated and holistic fisheries development, including conservation and deciding body on the introduction of alien species in the country. Mission is Blue Revolution. It is working through the National Fisheries Development Board. This is the building which is, if you see, this is like in the shape of a fish, seven-storied building in the shape of a fish. This is the NFDB office. And it is meant for upscaling R&D technologies into the farmer production system and infrastructure development. Three major things which are coming, which are in the pipeline, that is the policy frameworks on the mariculture, marine fishery policy, and the inland fishery policy. Now, another very important player is Marine Products Export Development Authority, which is MPDA, but it is under Ministry of Commerce. Now, it regulates exports of marine products and on a sustained and quality basis. Inspection of marine products is raw material production and processing infrastructure, fixing standards, specifications, trainings, as well as marketing of seafoods. It represents India in the WTO. There are now three networks under it. One is which implement the fishing, authorized fishing practices, that is NETFISH. Another is NAKSA, which is called as child of NACA actually. It was NACA and PIDA project, and still they call it the child of NACA. So promote sustainable aquaculture practice and empowerment of small and marginal farmers, and commercial upscale of production technology, that is Rajiv Gandhi Center for Aquaculture. So this is the structure which is working in Ministry of Commerce, but there are lots of it. Like we are in the governing board, we come from the Ministry of Agriculture, we are in the governing board of the MPDA. So like that it is working. Now, what is the research support? It is primarily Indian Council of Agriculture Research, research organized for the agriculture, including fisheries. Under the fisheries division of ICR, we have got 8 institutions which are product commodity specific, like Center Marine Fisheries Research Institute, we have a guy from there, Center Inland Fisheries Research Institute, Center Institute of Fisheries Technology, Center Institute of Brackish Water Aquaculture, Central Institute of Freshwater Aquaculture, Directorate of Coldwater Fisheries, and Central Institute of Fisheries Education, and ours, from where I belong, National Bureau of Fish Genetic Resources. Now, what is going to be the step forward into the fisheries sector? This is a new policies coming. These are in the bill stage. National Inland Fisheries and Aquaculture Policies and National Policies on Aquaculture, Mariculture. This will create, meant for enabling environment for sustainable development of all kinds of aquaculture to ensure the nutrition, security, livelihood and the ecological health, and alignment with relevant national and global instruments and guidelines which are from the FAO or the Convention of Biological Diversity. So, whatever the development happens, that should happen with a global planning process. Now, management of natural resources for aquaculture, including registration and licensing, mostly registered as business as per the state and taxation. There are no specific laws for registering aquaculture firms or anything. But to other things, to facilitate the need for traceability and other quality thing, MPDA is registering on the GPS-based database all the export-oriented aquaculture farms. Then procedures set up for the coastal farms, mostly shrimp aquaculture, and they are governed by the such registration primarily by the Coastal Aquaculture Authority. And upcoming this policies will address many of such lacunas. And what we don't have, hatcheries do not have appropriate registration to implement the future accreditation process, primarily in the Indian major carp sector. Now, aquaculture food safety, including certification and traceability, it is working through two things. National traceability practices for the fish and fishery products governed by the MPDA through the like pre-harvest test. They are for the supply to the European Union, they are required. So that is MPDA is ensuring. Then food control system by the Export Inspection Council, EIC. And for the domestic food, the Safety Standards and Authority of India, that is FSSAI. So these are the two agencies which are working on the food safety. Now, very important is biosecurity and animal health management. Biosecurity and animal health management was introduced as an amendment to the Prevention of Contagious Animal Disease Act in 2009. In 2014, it was amended and 29 diseases of aquatic animals of concern were added in the act. So that means this act was passed by the Parliament of India. So it becomes very important for the concerned department to implement it. They cannot stop after that, since it is a part of law now, the animal diseases. This was done, and now another act which is coming, that is aquatic animal disease and health management. It will also cover the residues and all that. That is another law is coming in 2019. It is in drafting, and based on this national surveillance program, which our institute is coordinating across India in 22 states, we are coordinating. So that is being to implement this act. Now this is the. Where policy directly joined hand with the research, within 5 years we could establish such a large system of disease surveillance within India. So regulation of feed and drug. So I already have told that this one act which is coming, that will cover up this, the use of the diseases and all. And as per that proposed bill, the state government union territory will ensure use of only the approved drugs in aquaculture. Use of antibiotics is prohibited. There are no specific laws for the aquaculture labor, but they are governed with all the as a whole labor laws. In 2019, Code of Wages Act has been passed for that ensures the minimum wages. And at the same time, original act was in 1948. It was passed. But besides that, employer provident fund, state insurance, all this in the labor in the organized sector, they can avail. And besides that, there is an healthcare for the Indian citizen below a certain level of working, so that also can be claimed. That gives 500,000 of Indian rupees per year of the medical benefit to them. So, introduction of exotics. It is through a committee, that is a National Committee on Introduction of Exotic Aquatic Species in Indian Waters. After their consent, only that species can be introduced in India. That is based on the technical evaluation. Some of the technical standards and guidelines supporting the implementation of large regulation already available. Guidelines for regulating coastal aquaculture, then for Lithopinus venomi, guidelines and model procedures for accreditation of hatcheries, but it is not very effective at present. Then introduction of exotic species like sea bass, pangasi, and tilapia, jump plus expose and export procedures by NBA. Then disease diagnostic manuals, strategic plans for exotic and all the four in the end are been prepared by our institute. Then some of the gaps and issues. One is the challenge is that we need to transform aquaculture into an organized sector, which is lying unorganized at present. One of the important thing is land and input use for aquaculture should be regulated. There should be clear demarcation, because at present, policy framework on use and leasing of the land for aquaculture purpose is not very clear. Sometimes somebody may have an aquaculture farm, tomorrow he may convert it into rice field if it doesn't work. So that kind of thing in certain unorganized sector is still there. So there is need for appropriate legislation for the purpose of use of farms, land for aquaculture purpose. And benefit to farming community out of government policies should also be available to the aqua farmers. Then quality seed availability, conforming to designated standard and performance. To some extent for shrimp it is there, for others it is not there. And inbreeding is one of the problems because of the lack of good management practices. So there is need for policy framework for the superior quality of seed. Development and genetic, there are not appropriate policies for the dissemination of the improved variety. Already improved varieties are very few. And dissemination plannings are very not very adequate. So dissemination plan of the improved variety is also required. And one of the most important things, there should be appropriate policy framework which encourages the private sector investment into the improvement. then production of safe aquaculture produce that already is based on that. There should be national aquaculture certification standard for the country and system of traceability. Then introduction of non-native species and aquaculture. There is a need for harmonization of policies between the countries which share the waters. Unless otherwise, that problem will always remain. One of the initiatives NACA took was making the code of conduct for the transboundary movement of the aquatic animals. Similar kind of things, I think it will be useful. And management of wild relative aquaculture, which are under risk because of the escapes. That knowledge-based program and production of seed for stocking, there should be policy for stocking. Not each and everything which is available to hatcheries, they stock in the water. And building capacity and socio-economic stakeholders, and some of the challenges are what I like to say, the aquaculture management is a state subject and the policy for framework formulated by central government. It poses a challenge in implementation. Then different states have diverse priorities. And uniform implementation of aquaculture governance will remain a challenge in a country like India. But it can be done. It's not impossible. And increasing domestic demand, as I said, I think that's also an important thing for India. And these are some of the recommendations which already we have covered under the different themes. I need not to read all this. Some of the recommendations for strengthening aquaculture governance at the national and the local level. Thank you very much.